While the accomplishments of known white supremacists are still documented, framed, and distributed, both historical and ongoing racism in Abbotsford remains hushed. This creates tension between white and non-white people in the valley and can have dire consequences. Why is nobody talking about it? And what does this silence say about the community? This country was born out of the violent seizure of land that belonged to indigenous people across Turtle Island, and the systems that it's built upon continue to disenfranchise black people, indigenous people, and people of color every day. Abbotsford is the homeland of the Stolo, or the people of the river, now represented formally through the Sumas First Nation and the Matsqui First Nation. I'm recording this show on Coast Salish land, stolen from the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples, and I'm grateful to live and work here. I'm Ali Laube for CIVL Radio, and this is Abbotsford's Hushed History of Racism. This series was funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiative. To find the print and blog posts of this and other content from the Local Journalism Initiative, visit canada-info.ca. This content might include some explicit language. To understand the nature of systemic racism and white supremacy in Abbotsford, you have to understand the history. But that history can be hard to find, tucked away in archives and couched in vague and archaic language. The information is there if you look, and it speaks volumes about the area's past in relation to upholding structures that support white settlers. In 1925, American Ku Klux Klan members came to Abbotsford in search of new recruits. For $10 apiece, residents born in Canada, the US, the UK, and Northern Europe who were white, male, able-bodied, Protestant, and of sound mind could sign up to join the KKK and become part of an organized effort to, quote, maintain forever white supremacy, end quote. Several notable residents signed up, reads a statement on the Abbotsford Heritage Society website, which acknowledges that the KKK had a large following in Vancouver and the Fraser Valley in the 1920s. When Olivia Daniels started digging through a digital archive of newspapers, she wasn't expecting to start a research project on organized white supremacy in Abbotsford. A student researcher at UFV with a major in history and an extended minor in anthropology, she's also a student of Ian Roxborough-Smith, a co-chair of the Race and Anti-Racism Network and professor at UFV. Daniels discovered the involvement of Dixie Protestant women in Atlanta through one of his classes this summer. That discovery led her to investigate local events organized by groups like the KKK, Native Sons and Daughters, the Odd Fellows, and the Imperial Order Daughters of the Empire in Abbotsford over the years. Specifically, she set out to document the festivals and events that they held in the city. On multiple occasions, residents were documented wearing costumes based on racist caricatures of people of color, among them white people wearing blackface and yellowface. March 1926 was busy for the Abbotsford KKK. They had an overcrowded meeting on March 7th, where listeners were told to gather at nightly meetings until the end of the month. There, they could do things like cross-burning and night riding under cover of darkness, which they did walking down Essendine Avenue. This attracted hundreds of visitors. She says a majority of the town participated in KKK gatherings, although it's uncertain if people knew about the After Dark mission and activities of the Klan. The KKK also made regular efforts to ward off undesirable immigrant neighbors, as they called them. In 1928, there was a series of anti-Roman Catholic lectures at the Orange Hall, that was a KKK-backed venue, led by ministers, on the necessity of Protestant unity or white purity. The Native Sons would hold dances and an annual writing competition based on topics about Canadian nationalism, and the Imperial Order Daughters of the Empire also donated large sums of money to local lodges, including the KKK's Orange Hall. The Brethren of the Fiery Cross and Kilgar Care Club were two other KKK-affiliated groups that were active in Abbotsford in the 20s.
Having a festival, you collect money to put in your community, but it's all based on racism, and a lot of these donations would be meant to hide a lot of the more aggressive racism that people would perform.
Daniels has a specific interest in the role that women played in white supremacy groups in the 1900s. Although their involvement is largely undocumented, they supported their husbands, fathers, and brothers in their racist and xenophobic actions. Surely they were expected to at the time, but that doesn't negate the importance of the role of white women in upholding white supremacy.
One of these women's institutions of Huntington, I believe, which is a community in Abbotsford, they wrote a petition against immigrants coming into Abbotsford and living there, and they thought that this would be like a terrible idea and that it would cause a lot of corruption in their communities. And so they thought, as women and daughters of the community, that it was their right to speak up because they lived through the pioneer life of, you know, living in mosquitoes and building their homes and having the harsh winters. And so they felt like they had more of a right to live there than the immigrants. That's their words, not mine. They were all pretty racist organizations, right, that thought that they were doing good for the community, but it was only good for the white community, right?
In 2019, Heritage Abbotsford released a book called Pioneers and Petticoats about the women of Abbotsford's pioneering days. This was an initiative spearheaded by Christina Reed, the organization's executive director, who was trying to include more women in local exhibitions and research. It's her responsibility to implement the organization's strategic plans, write grants, manage finances, and work with staff. When Reed and the other staff were conducting research for the book, she says people would often ask for true but unflattering details to be kept off the record, meaning that they wouldn't be included in the final product. Daniels says erasing taboos from history like this is also part of the problem.
Why people were angry in the 1920s is because they thought Asian immigrants were stealing work from white people. So why I think this research is important for anybody to learn about is because I think Abbotsford and other communities have been shaped by these activities and rhetorics of these racist organizations. I think the scary thing is much of the talk against Asian peoples in these newspapers a long time ago actually sounds a lot like the criticism South Asian people in Abbotsford face, especially at UFE. And I think if the town was more mindful of their own history, maybe they could feel a pressure to change for the good of others. And so I think this is the best time to discuss these legacies of white supremacy, to deconstruct their racist beliefs and rhetoric. And to me, it's evident that history has repeated itself for too long here.
These historical omissions are problematic for people of color who don't see themselves reflected in the record. Not only are the contributions of entire groups of people swept from all documentation, their work receiving no thanks, but this false history misinforms generations of Canadians. Daniel says both the Brethren of the Fiery Cross and the Ku Klux Care Club were based around weekly spectacles like parades and public speeches. These were the KKK's investment into communities that they wanted to recruit in, and organizers were profiting off of members who paid admission and made donations at their events. She says people in Abbotsford actually paid double or more than they had to at Klan events, showing the support the organization had in the 20s. Extensive archival records on Abbotsford's past are stored at Reach Gallery Museum, where Chris Folds works. She started her career with museums in the 1980s, and part of her job was to search issues of the Abbotsford News for clippings related to the lumber company in local history. Through this studying, she found that racism in Abbotsford was both endemic and socially acceptable. For example, she says, there are several groups in the valley that had white-only membership criteria up until the 1990s, such as the Native Sons and Native Daughters. Canada continues to reckon with its history of racism and oppression. The country's first Prime Minister, John A. Macdonald, was one of the architects of the residential school system and other colonial policies and structures that were incredibly harmful. Macdonald also spent years trying to ruin, arrest, and eventually execute Métis leader Louis Riel for not wanting to have his land taken from him. In recent years, statues of Macdonald have been vandalized, damaged, and toppled across the country by activists who say the monuments contribute to a false historical narrative that favors settler culture. It exaggerates achievements and downplays transgressions, or in this case, the culture's participation in slavery and the upholding of white supremacy. But Macdonald is only one of many historical figures inaccurately represented in the history books. In the next episode, we're talking about one of Abbotsford's founding pioneer families who had connections to the KKK. Canada's history of colonization, genocide, and violence towards Indigenous people sets the foundation for the systemic white supremacy that continues to manifest in government today. This series is by no means an exhaustive list of every incident that has contributed to that history. Instead, it's a reflection, led by community experts and relevant areas of expertise, meant to be part of Civil's ongoing dedication to anti-racist coverage. I'm Allie Laube for Civil Radio. Thanks for listening.